Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. It's the 2018 premiere of Red Leg Nation Radio and also the 192nd episode of the podcast. Thank you for joining us here today. I'm Chad Dotson, your host, and with me again, as always, my good friend and yours, maybe, Jason Linden. How are you today, Jason?
I am well, and I'm everyone's good friend, Chad.
Are everyone. You?
No.
Sometimes you're not mine.
Talk to my students.
You sometimes disagree with me, and I don't react well when people disagree with me.
That's true.
But we may do some disagreeing on this podcast, but we're back to talk about the Cincinnati Reds, the 2018 Cincinnati Reds. And it's, you know, it's been about a month since we took a little bit of a hiatus for the off season, but we're back and there's really, even though it's been an extremely quiet off season for the Reds, and we'll get to that, there's still a lot to talk about. And this has been an eventful week, at least for some of us. It all began with, you've heard of Christian Yelich, Jason?
I believe he is the center fielder for the Miami Marlins.
Oh, he was the center fielder for the Miami Marlins, Jason. He's changing addresses.
Ah.
He's moving to balmy Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Milwaukee Brewers traded for Christian Yelich, a great young center fielder that I had my hopes set on joining the Reds. And instead, another team in the division acquires his services for a pretty steep price that we'll get into in a moment, but they paid a lot in trade to the Marlins for Yelich's service. But now we've got at least three teams in the division. This is why I got upset by this deal, Jason. I wanted Yelich bad, and now we've got three teams in the division that are really being proactive, trying to get better this offseason, and the Reds are just standing pat. Should I be upset about that?
God, I don't know. I can't make up my mind, to be honest. What the Brewers gave up, that's a pretty intense trade. That's a lot that they gave up. And it's prospects, so you never know.
But prospects that are major league ready. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. Something the Reds probably didn't have.
Yeah, it's still a lot. Yeah. You know, kind of what I've said is it looked to me like the Reds would have had to give up something like Senzel, Trammell, Winker. I don't know.
That's a lot.
I don't know if I would do that, honestly. Because he's so far away and there's so much risk, I could see like Hunter Green maybe. I don't know. How do you feel about Hunter Green, Chad?
I don't know what you mean, Jason. Why would I have any opinion at all about Reds phenom 18-year-old starting pitching prospect Hunter Green?
Well, I don't know. I was just wondering if you know what you might want someone to say to you in 2 years if Hunter Green blows out his elbow.
Oh, mercy. Okay, let's address the elephant in the room here. No, it's funny. You know, we were talking after Yelich was traded to the Brewers. I was sort of making the point on Twitter that I would not have been willing to trade Senzel. I would not have been willing to make send the packages you just said, certainly, when you include Jesse Winker, Tedder Trammell. That's too much. I don't think the Reds, I'm okay with the Reds not getting Yelich, even though I really wanted him. I think he's under contract for 5 seasons, 25 years old. I mean, we're talking an all-star center fielder. He was just going to look gorgeous in Great American Ballpark. And I really wanted the Reds to get him. But when you see what Milwaukee gave up, I'm like, oof, I don't know that I'm willing to do that. But I made the point that I would be willing if the Marlins said, okay, we start this discussion with you got to give us one of Senzel or Hunter Green. I say, okay, we have something to discuss because I would absolutely trade Hunter Green in that package. And if you could put together a package that would get a guy like Senzel. And a lot of people argue with me about that. And I understand. I don't want to trade Hunter Green. This guy's an amazing prospect. But on the other hand, as they say, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect because you never know when they're going to get hurt or which ones are going to pan out. You just don't know. And so I made the offhand comment that, well, okay, let's hang on to Hunter. You say you want to hang on to somebody. And I got to look up his name now because I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce it, who said that. But I said, what happens if in 2 years Hunter Green blows out his arm and we get nothing for him? And, of course, it seems that our good friend Hunter Green saw that. No, it's Ryan. Ryan, what's your last name? I gotta find that.
I have to take issue because I think probably the operative word here is that you said, talk to me in 2 years when Hunter Green blows.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
That when there. I think that's probably what caught young Mr. Green's attention.
Well, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, I did say it like that because, yeah, I was just saying, if that happens, if you look at just that tweet, it's out of context. You think that it sounds like I'm predicting that he's going to blow out his arm. And I'm not. Gosh, I hope he doesn't. you know, this guy is one of the best prospects the Reds have ever had. I definitely don't. Ryan Rayburn. That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure. Ryan, sorry. It was you that got me in all this trouble with Hunter Green, though. Evidently, Hunter Green, I did say that. And he saw it somehow. I tend to think he was probably searching for his name on Twitter. I don't know how else he would come upon a conversation between me and Ryan that was, you know, didn't involve him. Nobody tagged him in it as far as I could tell. But he made a tweet that he needed a witch doctor to, because I was putting bad voodoo on him. And it was funny, whatever. I got a lot of people that didn't think it was very, very funny that tweeted at me after that. But, you know. So
I just want to check and make sure I've got this straight. As I understand it, you're going to need to sacrifice a live chicken to take the curse off of Hunter Green's elbow. Is that right?
That's pretty much the way it works. He asked for a paper clip and a live chicken and a cheeseburger and a lock of my hair, basically a hair sample. And I mean, it was really a sort of a crazy day. I was actually at work and in the middle of something that was really pretty important. And my phone was sitting over there, and it was going nuts. It just notification after notification. And it wasn't buzzing or anything, but I could see it lights up, you know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell because I was busy doing something else, and I couldn't look to see what was going on. And I'm like, what's happening here? And what had happened was that Hunter Green had called me out, and all his fans really jumped on me. And And one made a personal threat using some foul language. And after that, I think Twitter got involved because I was getting notifications of some that were using foul language and things like that. And then they were disappearing. They weren't showing up in my timeline, which I thought was interesting. You know, I explained what I was saying later, and I made some jokes about showing up at wherever his home stadium is. And I'd actually already been invited to join James Rapine on ESPN 1530 that day to talk about the Reds. And, of course, that ended up being a discussion about my Twitter account, which is fine. Whatever. It was fun. It was funny. Hunter Green was liking my tweets the rest of the day and basically said, you know, it's all in good fun. Some people didn't take it that way, and I understand it. But let me just clear the air here. I don't want Hunter Green to blow out his arm. Okay.
You know, we should say this, that if anything, it's pretty clear that Hunter Green has a fairly decent head on his shoulders and understands, you know, when to not overreact or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, he was in on the joke, really. I mean, from my perspective, he's an 18-year-old kid having a little fun on Twitter. It didn't hurt my feelings any. And actually, I thought it was hilarious. I enjoyed it all day long. Some people didn't enjoy it. Some people I got a couple of nasty emails and a bunch of nasty tweets, but also a lot of people just sort of laughing about it and saying, "Oh, you know, it's hilarious." So, but let me just—I'm on the record here. I want Hunter Green to be a number one starter for the Reds for his entire career. I mean, I would love that if he can be the guy that he's projected to be. I would much rather have that than trading for Christian Yelich if I could be assured that he's going to be that guy.
Yeah. I mean, if he's basically what, like, I don't know, Roger Clemens, I mean.
Well, that's his projections. I mean, that's his ceiling. Maybe not Roger Clemens, but, I mean, the guy does throw 102.
Yeah, no, that's actually his ceiling.
I think it might be, actually. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's the LeBron of baseball.
Yeah.
So you, I mean, you want him to be an ace for the Reds rather than getting Christian Yelich, right?
Yeah, of course I do.
But do you see where I'm coming from on that?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I would absolutely. I would in a second trade Hunter Green for Christian Yelich. Like, no thoughts right now. Let's do that. Just no question. Just go. Like, now. Yeah, because you don't know. Because he is a kid, and he could hurt his elbow, or he could just not work out. Like, you know, he's got a ceiling that's out of this world, but boy, most people don't hit their ceilings.
Right.
And so,
and especially, you know, pitchers, you can't pick and choose which ones will. You just don't know.
Right. Yeah, you have no idea. You know, in the case that I've been bringing up lately, and this is probably somebody we should talk about too, is when we get into other discussions, but it's Tyler Mahle, who several years ago was thought of as basically a fine prospect. You know, nothing, no great shakes or anything, probably an okay-ish major league pitcher. But he may very well end up being the best of that crop, because there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, and nobody has any idea what any of them are going to do, really.
And the flip side of that is a guy that's also fighting for a spot on the rotation, Robert Stevenson, who,
yeah,
you know, was a number one pick and sort of a can't-miss guy. And, you know, and he still may end up being that guy. I'm not saying that he's not, but compare him with Tyler Mahle, and you see that this just, it's difficult to project. So that's the only reason I was suggesting the Reds may want to consider trading Hunter Green when they wouldn't want to trade Nick Senzel.
Yeah. Senzel seems much more of a can't miss. He's much closer. His ceiling is not, you know, I don't know, Babe Ruth in the way that Hunter Green's ceiling is Roger Clemens. But I don't know, what's Nick Senzel's ceiling like?
Hard to say.
Yeah,
you think of a name while I say this.
Like, you know,
it's something good. His ceiling is good, but he's performed in the professional ranks now to where we know that at least his floor is as an above average hitting. I think an above average hitter in the big leagues. Now that may not happen, but I think that if you're going to bet the ranch on somebody, you bet the ranch on him.
It's unlikely at this point that he is a bust. You feel fairly confident that he is going to at least be an above average major league player.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's become clear. I mean, he played in college. He's now had a couple of years in the big league or in the minor leagues. Whereas with Hunter Green's unique in that I think his ceiling is higher than Nick Senzel's ceiling. It's hard to compare pitchers and hitters, but I think his ceiling is
higher.
But we don't know what his floor is. How many times did he pitch? 3 or 4 times in Billings last year?
And
we just don't know. Now, I think he's unique, as I was going to say a moment ago, in that if he doesn't pan out as a pitcher, I don't know, you might get a center fielder out of him. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see him, because he was a shortstop and a big-time prospect as a hitter. He DH'd some for Billings last year. So, I mean, there are more than one ways to skin that particular cat, but
Listen, man, don't get into sacrificing more animals. You're talking about skinning cats and things now. We've already got a chicken on the line. Let's just leave it there.
I think so, but let's talk about what it's going to take to improve this team. If you're running the Reds, and there's somebody that can help the team for the next 5 years, like Christian Yelich, and I don't have any particular names now because Yelich is off the table. But if there's somebody that can help the team for the next 5 years, don't you have to sort of pursue them pretty hard right now? Even though they don't think 2018 is going to be the year.
Yeah, I go back and forth, frankly.
Maybe it depends on who you're talking about.
Right, yeah, it depends on who you're talking about and where on the field. And it's one of those things where it's just hard to see into the future. You know, I want to say they could use a center fielder sooner rather than later, but I don't know what Trammell's going to do. What if he's ready soon? You know, what if he gets on it and busts up Double A this year and, you know, hey, all right, let's go. Maybe he's ready next year. Maybe he's not, you know, and it's the same deal with the rotation. Like, Lord, I have no idea. I know that there are like last year, 9 or 10 or something like that, potential like good major league starters. And I also feel like I'm like, well, are we going to get 5 major league starters out of there? I don't know. You know, it's tempting to be like, well, go sign Lance Lynn or go sign Yu Darvish or whoever. But I also understand the argument for like, no, we're just not going to do that.
I guess. I mean, I think that I can buy it. If Dick Williams and the Reds say, all right, we're going to wait till next offseason to really start pushing to add pieces, I can buy that. I mean, 2018, some things have to go right for them to be in the wild card hunt. I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but some things have to go right. But when you're talking about adding a player like Yelich or a similar player that can contribute for the next few years, you got to jump while the iron's hot, basically. Strike while the iron's hot, as the saying goes. And if you can get a guy like that right now that we're talking about for the next few years, I think you've got to go ahead and take the plunge. And I think they did try. I mean, I think they were in on talks with the Marlins, and I just think they weren't willing to give up Senzel. And I'm okay with that. I think it's reasonable not to get this particular guy.
I agree. Here, let's play a game. I'm going to play a game.
Is it baseball?
I mean, I do like to play baseball, but okay. I retired in eighth grade for very sound reasons. Yes.
Maybe not voluntarily, but
yeah. But let's. I'm gonna throw out a name, and you tell me just your gut instinct, and you'll be probably a little optimistic, but probably not as optimistic as I might be. How many wins above replacement is this guy worth this year?
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to throw out several names. Luis Castillo.
4.
Homer Bailey.
2.5.
Tyler Molly.
2.5.
Well, there you go. You have an above average pitching rotation now, no matter what form five do.
I'm too optimistic, though. You know me, Jason. We're similar in that sense. But
none of those are ridiculous. No. And that's the thing is the way I think of it is that in terms of putting together a pitching rotation, you want kind of like 4-3-2-1-0 from first to fifth, like 4 WAR, 3 WAR, 2-1, and 0. And if you can do that, then I think you're on solid ground. If you can't, then you probably need to add somebody.
Yeah. On the offensive side of the ledger, I feel like the Reds really need I love Billy Hamilton. They need a center fielder and a shortstop. I think that's where they need to be looking. And that's why Yelich kills me. We keep going back to him. I keep going back to him because that's the one guy.
I gotta disagree with you here. This is one of those times where I'm going to disagree with you. You ready?
Excellent. I'm excited about this.
The Reds do not need a shortstop.
I don't. I think they might need a shortstop.
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
You don't know how we don't know? How I know that we don't know?
Tell me.
During the age season that Jose Peraza just had, okay?
And by Jose Peraza, you mean the presumptive starting shortstop for the 2018 Cincinnati Reds.
That's what I mean. So this was his age 23 season, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. Please guess the OPS for Davy Concepcion when he was 23.
Oh, gosh. OPS, yeah. 620.
496. That is OPS.
496.
496.
That was my Little League OPS, actually.
Yeah. At age 22, he was 641. At age 24, he was 541. And then he figured it out and was a perfectly acceptable hitter basically for the rest of his career.
You have his WAR numbers handy, though?
Yeah. He was age 23, 1.1, which that's some defense there.
Yeah.
Age 24, he was 0.7. He was bad, though, Chad, is the point. He was not a particularly good player until he was 25. And you know what? I'm going to look this up real quick. If I remember this correctly, I'm pretty sure a man whose last name is Smith and who also played shortstop was pretty terrible for a while, too.
Certainly at the plate, there's no question about it that he was.
Yeah. But, okay. Ozzie Smith was a terrible hitter until he was 27, and then he was only bad for 3 years before he became decent.
But who's Concepcion? He never turned into a perennial All-Star or anything.
No, never.
All-Star Game MVP.
That's my whole point about Jose Peraza is that if there is a single player on the roster for whom you say we need to give him one more shot, especially given what we saw from him in terms of plate discipline in the second half of the season, it's Jose Peraza. He's younger than most of the pitchers that everybody are ready to give a second chance to. He has been a top 10 prospect in multiple organizations, And he's still, like, he's only a year older than Nick Senzel.
Listen, I'm with you. I'm not saying the Reds should give up on him. You know, I just, if you can find a clear upgrade at shortstop, that's one of the places that it's sort of obvious to look for.
I'll agree with that. I'll acknowledge that. The shortstop is a place at which they could upgrade, but it is also a place where the best upgrade might be to sit on your hands.
Maybe. And I think that's the benefit of having another year of sort of sorting, is that to see what he can do. Because, frankly, I think he's going to be excellent defensively once he has some time to settle in at shortstop. I mean, he's quick. His hands are decent. I mean, I don't see any reason why he can't become a really good shortstop. He won't be as good next year as Zach Cozart has been, but I think eventually he can be very good.
I think he'll be pretty good, and I think, you know, one of the things that I have just, it doesn't tell you everything, but one of the things I've started to really pay attention to is just, does a person have a reputation as someone who is a hard worker slash willing to make adjustments or whatever? And that's, I've heard that about Jose Peraza, and frankly, I've seen him make adjustments. You know, it's really odd. I saw him when he was first with the Bats after the Reds got him, and shortly before he got sent up or called up or whatever. And, you know, his plate discipline was really pretty solid. He was clearly a contact hitter, but it wasn't like he was swinging at everything. And then he got messed up somewhere along the line, and I think it just took him a while to find his way back. But, you know, the second half of last year, I think what the Reds got out of him, if he could repeat that, I think especially because he's a bottom-of-the-order hitter that nobody thinks is a leadoff hitter, unlike a certain center fielder.
We'll get there.
And I think that if they can get from him what they got from him in the second half, which was, I'm looking this up real quick, second half last year, yeah, he was a .333 on-base percentage. If they can get that from him,
gosh.
Out of
a good glove shortstop, yeah. You take
that. He's never going to earn his money with his bat, you know, in that sense. But I think that's more than adequate.
Well, here's why I'm willing to. Well, there's two reasons why I'm willing to give him a chance to show himself. He is young. He's a young, highly touted guy. You know, you don't get that without, you know, there being some ability there. But you talk about this second half surge, and you talk about players that are willing to work. And Zach Buchanan had a great piece in the Cincinnati Inquirer July, August last year that showed. I mean, he had the video that showed specifically the changes that he made in his swing. And he'd been working with the Reds on making these changes so that he could see the ball a little bit longer, so that he could improve, and so that it would improve his plate discipline, basically. And he implemented those changes, and you saw actual results on the field. So it wasn't a sense of a situation where he's on a hot streak or something. There were actual, you know, physical, mechanical reasons that he was hitting better. At least there's an argument that there were actual mechanical changes that were made to his swing. And that makes me think, oh, if that's something he can implement, you know, on an ongoing basis,
Yeah. Maybe
he can be a .333 on-base percentage guy. And if he can get his on-base percentage up that high, That's a valuable player.
And let me tell you something. I just based off of what I saw from him in the minors, if he can get that plate discipline improved, he's not going to be a power hitter, but we'll see more power from him. He'll be somebody who'll get you, I don't know, 25 or 30 doubles.
Yeah. Because he can put the bat on the ball.
Yeah, he definitely has more raw power than Hamilton does, and that hasn't shown up in results yet. But he definitely, when he squares the ball up, hits it harder than Billy Hamilton does.
I'm interested to see how he does, certainly this year. I don't know. But I think the Reds can find an upgrade there. They should be looking at it, but I'm not ready to toss him out. Can I say one more thing about Christian Yelich and why I was so enamored of him?
Sure.
And I'm going to say this. I keep going back to it because I want to ask you this question. As a 24-year-old, Christian Yelich had 5.3 wins above replacement. He won a Silver Slugger that year. He'd already won a Gold Glove Award a couple years before. Now, I get that the Reds weren't willing to give up what it took to get him. And I think that's, as I've said, a completely reasonable decision for Dick Williams to make. Because the Brewers overpaid, probably.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to go for it. But should it bother me this much that he went to a team in the division, and that now that we have these three teams in the division that are really pushing to get better while the Reds are sort of sitting and waiting for their window to open. Should that frustrate me as much as it does?
I think it's completely reasonable to be frustrated by him going to somebody in the division. I found that extremely irritating. I do think, though, like, okay, actually, here's, I might get this wrong, but I have many, many friends who have been to law school. And hey, one of them.
Hey, I went to law school.
I know, but one of them told me about this thing. He said everybody hears it in law school. It's like a sort of a moral puzzle type thing. And the idea is basically this, like, in one circumstance, there's a train that's going to crash, and there's a train that's not going to crash, and if you flip the switch, it'll switch tracks, and it'll crash, and everyone dies. In another scenario, there's a train that's already going to crash, and if you flip the switch, everyone will survive, and they won't crash. Well, everybody tends to read the scenario in which if you do nothing, it somehow feels, and everybody dies, it somehow feels less wrong than if you do something and someone dies. And when really you know the result either way, and it's just the flip of a switch, it's nothing, it's just moving your hand. And, you know, it's just, I guess, a moral quandary right. That they written mm-hmm. in law school to talk about, you know, why or what. And I think that to some extent applies here, where it's, you know, unless the question is, what specifically would you do? Like, here is a specific thing that you can do. I think doing something just to do something isn't necessarily the best move. I think it would satisfy a lot of people because a lot of us want to see stuff done. But, you know, right now, I mean, you know, I'll take as an example, everybody wants to see Michael Lorenzen get a shot in the rotation, and reports are that he's at least going to get a look as a starter. And I've kind of been not in that camp simply because they just don't have that many starts to give people. At some point, like, sure, it's great to have 10 or 12 potential starting pitchers, but you only have 5 slots in the major league rotation, and you only have 5 in the AAA rotation. So at some point, somebody's got to not be a candidate for the major league starting rotation. At some point, you've just got to go with somebody or not. And so, okay, sure, you add, let's say you sign Lance Lynn. And I would probably support that. That's probably a good signing. But then we're told that 4 spots are already spoken for. So then what? You're sending Stevenson and Romano and Molly and Garrett and Reed. All of those guys are now, and Lorenzen, none of those guys are now available for the rotation unless somebody gets hurt, right?
Yes.
Is that something you want to do for a pitcher who's about to enter his age 31 season?
Well, I think you make a really good argument for the Reds don't need to be just doing something to be doing something. But, you know, as a sort of a fan who's sick and tired of the losing, it's just really hard to look at it and realize here we are back in 2004 and the Reds and the Pirates are going to be also Rans, and the Brewers and the Cardinals and the Cubs are really trying to win the division this year. And it's just, it's hard to deal with. And then if you think about, well, next year might be the year that we can compete, but then you look and say, well, we still got to compete with those 3 teams. I don't know. I'm frustrated that, really what I'm frustrated with is that Walt Jocke took so long to get off his rear end and start this rebuild, whereas we could be in the same position as the Brewers now, or in a better position, actually, if we'd have started the rebuild earlier instead of, you know, praying that Todd Frazier was going to lead us to prominence instead of trading him.
Completely agree. The Reds absolutely should have cut bait a solid 1 season earlier than they did.
And I feel bad for Dick Williams because he's getting some of the blame. He's going to get the blame if they don't perform this year.
Yeah, and none of it's his fault. And it's
not
none
at all.
Of it's on him.
Walt Jocke completely put Dick Williams behind the 8 ball. I mean, completely made his job much more difficult. But I don't know. I just, anybody but the Brewers or the Cardinals or the Cubs. If Yelich could have gone anywhere else, I'd have been like, well, the Reds gave it a shot. They couldn't get him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's
It is just one of those things. This is, I guess, my personal feeling is that 2018, in terms of acquisitions, is the last year where I will find it acceptable for them to stand pat. I really think they should trade Billy Hamilton if they can find a taker for him. But if they're not going to get anything substantial for him, there's also no point.
Right.
Because they don't have anybody better in the pipe who's ready yet. Trammell maybe soon, but not yet. And so, yeah, I mean, basically this year, if I will be upset if they don't figure out the pitching rotation and if Jesse Winker doesn't get 550 at-bats.
Well, to that point, you know, you and I sort of agreed on something the other day, as we do occasionally. But I made a statement that really my opinion on Brian Price, of course, the Reds brought Brian Price back for another year, as we all know, to the consternation of very many Reds fans. But I said that my opinion on Brian Price as a manager is going to be largely governed by where Jesse Winker and Billy Hamilton bat in the order on opening day or in the first week of the season. Do you get what I'm saying by that?
Oh, I do.
What are your thoughts?
I think Jesse Winker needs to lead off, and I think Billy Hamilton needs to hit 7th, 8th, or 9th.
It's so self-evident that this shouldn't even be controversial in 2018. Has Moneyball, have sabermetrics taught us nothing?
And frankly, I will go completely on the record with this. I think that Dick Williams should tell Brian Price that if he wants to keep his job, that Jesse Winker is his leadoff hitter.
Period.
Period.
Full stop.
Full stop.
And you know, I'm well known as being maybe the biggest Billy Hamilton homer on earth. I love Billy. I still think there's a non-zero chance that Billy becomes the guy I want him to become. He's electrifying no matter what. But
yeah,
if we're looking at opening day, and I'm going to assume that Jesse Winker's in the opening day lineup, he better be,
yes.
If we're looking at opening day and Billy Hamilton is your leadoff hitter, I've been very supportive of Brian Price, and I didn't criticize the decision to bring him back. I don't call for anyone's firing as a manager. These are real people. I don't call for their firings. But if Billy Hamilton is the leadoff hitter on opening day with the current group of players that we have and that we expect to be in the lineup at that time, I'm done with Brian Price. I'm completely done, and I'm not sure what else he can do to change my mind. And I have defended him multiple times in print.
Yeah.
I think he gets a bad rap sometimes. Some of the things that have happened to the Reds the last few years are not his fault. But that's something that's completely within his control.
I completely agree. And more to the point, I think, at least for me, is that whether a trade occurs or not, Adam Duvall and Scott Schebler should not regularly both be in the lineup at the same time.
They need to be platooning.
Yeah.
If we have both.
They need to be platooning. And overall, Schebler needs to play more. I reversed my position on Adam Duvall, and I'll keep it reversed, which is that I think he's a solid major leaguer.
Yeah.
But he's nevertheless faded badly down the stretch 2 years in a row. He is going to turn 30 this year. And hasn't learned how to walk yet. So I think, and was actually overall a below average hitter last year. So while he has value, I think he is a fourth outfielder. I think he needs to be the fourth outfielder for the Reds, which is going to drive people insane because they're going to go, but he hit 30 home runs 2 years in a row.
He was an all-star.
Yeah, he was an all-star. Well, that doesn't mean anything. He still wasn't very good in the second half. And if he fatigues like that, he should be a fourth outfielder. Like, if he's fresh, he could be a heck of a bat off the bench. But if he's not, I don't know.
Yeah, if it's up to me, I give Schebler 70% of the at-bats anyway. Yeah. When you look at the times that he's been healthy, he's performed. He's over 2 years younger than Adam Duvall and is likely to improve a little bit. But even if you want a straight platoon, not a straight platoon, but you know, Duvall hitting against left-handed pitchers. Schebler hitting against the right-handed hitters or pitchers. Good grief, I can't even talk today, Jason. What's going on? I've got this Christian Yelich thing on my mind, and I can't get away from it. It's causing me to, I don't know. But anyway, platoon them. And then you've got a great bat off the bench, no matter who's on the bench from those two guys. Unless you ever play a little bit of center field, if you got a small ballpark or something. But, I don't know. I think you can make it work, but the only way you can make this four-man outfield work is if you're 100% guaranteed that Jesse Winker is going to get 500, 550, 600 at-bats.
Really, if we're being honest, the only person in that outfield who should be guaranteed 150 starts is Jesse Winker until he proves he doesn't belong.
Absolutely.
Look
at it this way. Jesse Winker, last year, .375 on-base percentage in his first taste of the big leagues. If he can manage that in this upcoming year, and this will be his rookie year, by the way, the way that works. He'll be eligible for rookie of the year. If he can manage a .375 on-base percentage, there are only two outfielders in the history of the Cincinnati Reds that have ever had a higher on-base percentage than .375. Frank Robinson's one of them. He was .379 when he won rookie of the year. What's that?
Frank Robinson, was he any good? I feel like I've heard that name.
He was good his rookie year, but I think he sort of didn't do much the rest of his career.
After that. Okay.
Until he got inducted in the Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Winker's career on-base percentage in the minors is .398. So it's not outside the realm of possibility he'll get to .375 or .380. If he can get to .380, that beats Frank Robinson's on-base percentage his first year. And again, that's not crazy talk. And so that's exactly why what you just said is correct. This guy has to be in the lineup. There's no excuse not to have this guy in the lineup this year of all years when you're trying to see who you've got. And I love Scott Schebler. I'm a big Adam Duvall fan. I mean, these guys have played well for the Reds. Yeah. But come on. Adam Duvall is not going to be on a starting outfielder for the Reds in 3 years. Scott Schebler, probably not. He could be. Jesse Winker has a chance to be, you know, for the next 5-6 years, the starting, I guess, right fielder for the Reds. And so it doesn't make any sense to delay his progression into a full-time big leaguer any further.
No, it's time. It's absolutely time.
So what if he's hitting sixth or even second and Billy Hamilton's leading off on opening day? What are you going to say?
Nope.
That's all, just no.
Nope. This is a bit of a divergence, but you know who should really hit before Billy Hamilton at any point in the lineup?
Tucker Barnhart. Why is that?
Because do you know what Tucker Barnhart's on base percentage was last year?
Like 112.
Exactly. No, 347 was his on base percentage last year.
347. I have confirmed here. I'm looking at it right now. I've confirmed it. It was 347.
Tucker Barnhart gets on base.
Yeah. He's Ryan Hannigan with a better glove.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Hannigan had a pretty good glove, Chad.
It's true. It's true. But he never won a gold glove like Barnhart did. So, okay, let's just say he's Ryan Hannigan with a little bit better bat, maybe.
Maybe. He might have a touch more power than Ryan Hannigan. But no, he can walk. He gets on base. I would much rather see Winker Barnhart 1-2 than Hamilton Winker 1-2.
Absolutely. Not even close. Absolutely. Yeah. What about Winker?
Now, I would like to see Barnhart like sixth or seventh, but you know, in a theoretical circumstance.
What about Winker Suarez?
Yeah, I mean, if I am setting the lineup, let's say 2 weeks in, because it's something like 2 weeks when you gain an extra year of control over a player you're calling up. So for the bulk of the Red season, my lineup is probably if I'm in charge. My top four go like this: Winker, Suarez, Senzel, Votto. Because despite like the convention, the number three spot is actually the least important spot among that, because the third hitter comes up with two outs and the base is empty a lot. But really, those four in basically any order at the top of the lineup, I am okay with.
And Suarez fifth?
No. Suarez in the top four.
Oh, you Winker, said Suarez.
Salvato. In the top of the order. You shuffle them around depending on whatever you feel like doing that day. But those four are the top of the order. And then you go, I don't know, Schebler, Barnhart, Peraza, pitcher Hamilton. Do that. That's my lineup.
I like it. But see, with that lineup, you've got Senzel playing, which I presume second base. That means you got no Scooter Jeanette. You just forgetting about Scooter?
can be my very good utility player on the bench.
But he's got such a cool name.
He does. And you know what? The thing is about a scooter is nobody uses it to get anywhere. It's just for fun.
I like it. And Scooter can be what he was signed to be when he was picked up off the waiver wire, which is a solid utility guy. And he can do that.
Yep.
Some pop off the bench. I know he had 27 home runs last year, but, you know, come on. Give me Nick Senzel.
Agree completely.
It's about time you agreed with me. Well, okay, so we've talked a lot about the hitters. I think we agree that if Brian Price leads off with Billy Hamilton on day one, we're both probably done with Brian Price.
Yeah, I'm done defending Brian Price. Yeah. If he has the option of Jesse Winker and Billy Hamilton leads off, nah, we're done. I'm done defending him.
I wish for his success, but I will never defend him again, and I have done that. But what about this pitching staff? I mean, we talk about all these hitters. Isn't it really the case that if the Reds are going to compete in 2019, then we've got to see some big-time progression by the pitchers in 2018, don't you think?
Yeah, I completely agree.
How do you see it playing out?
Well, I think Castillo is the closest to a sure thing, which, knock on wood, because we're talking about pitchers. I think if he's healthy, I like Disco. I don't know. I mean, he had the tear that supposedly healed, right? It's one of these deals. So hopefully he's back and okay. He did manage to take the mound in sort of minor league and like Arizona League action or something like that toward the end of the year in 2017. But, oh boy, I mean, if he's healthy, I like him. I really think Finnegan is eventually destined for the bullpen. But here's actually, as we were talking earlier, I had this question and I wanted to ask you. So Homer Bailey's contract runs through the end of 2019. If Homer Bailey is a below average pitcher coming out of the gate in 2018, how long do you stick with him?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that. It depends on how everyone else is performing around him.
Yeah.
But what I do think is, why couldn't Homer Bailey have a sort of an act two to his career where he moves to the bullpen like John Smoltz? Now, that's not comparing him to a Hall of Famer, but
right.
Why couldn't he be a short reliever?
He quite possibly could be.
So maybe I wouldn't be hesitant to move out of that rotation if everybody else is performing well around him, with the thought that, well, maybe, you know, there are other options for him.
And, you know, one of the things that I think, or that I at least am personally encouraged by, is that it seems to me over the last few years that Homer has really kind of grown. And he seems both to put like more of the right kind of pressure, but less pressure overall on himself. Like, he doesn't seem so afraid of being bad. I don't know. I'm not putting this exactly how I want to put it, but I feel like he's much more in the Bronson Arroyo mode, where if you told him now, you know, you're not getting it done as a starter anymore, we want you to go to the bullpen, he would look at his results and be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I'll go to the bullpen without throwing a fit about it. And I mean, I hope that Homer Bailey comes out and is the Homer Bailey of old, you know, an excellent, you know, mid to top of the rotation pitcher. Like, that would be fantastic. But my question really is just like, what if he's not? Because we are getting to the end of that contract, and it's not, we're to the point now where if he kind of is what he is, then eventually you might have to move on from him, especially if there are other guys knocking on the door, which there may well be.
Yeah, and I say in terms of moving on from him, at least maybe there's an option that you can move him somewhere else, because I think that you don't have to squint too hard to see the potential situation where the Reds have to move on. They got a bunch of guys vying for those spots.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other side of that argument is that I really believe I saw enough from him last year to make me think he can absolutely get back to being a solid number three guy. Or number four. But I mean, I saw enough from him for me to believe that he might be a different pitcher this year than we've seen in a while. And so he's never going to be the guy that he was when he got hurt,
yeah,
the guy that earned that contract, but I think he can be a valuable pitcher for this team.
And I mostly agree with you, for the record. I think you're probably right, but I think that, you know, the possibility that he's bad is large enough that you have to think about what if. I think, at least I think the Reds should be entertaining that notion.
Oh, they have to. They need to be having those conversations behind closed doors, because, you know, what do you do with a guy? You know, I don't think the answer is you're not going to send him to the minors, obviously. You can't do that. You know, long relief, you stick him down there and maybe let him be a spot starter because he's Homer Bailey and he's being paid so much money. But I don't know. Maybe you go to him and say, hey, let's try as a setup guy, and maybe, you know, who knows? You could be a closer. And I actually see his stuff working in a bullpen, you know, not facing it a lot the second time around.
You know, the giant asterisk, over all of this is, remember last year when we were like, hey, the Reds have so many starting pitchers, I wonder who's going to be in the rotation.
Yeah, it might be Homer.
And, you know, then we were like, oh, hey, Luis, Lisa Berto Bonilla, that's who it was.
Hold on, I didn't think we get to say this in 2018 because he's no longer with the Reds, but let's say it correctly. Luis Alberto Bonilla. Oh, that's the most fun to say that name of any guy that's ever played for the Reds.
And Asher
Wojciechowski.
That's the one. Thank you, Chad.
Also, did we mention Luis Alberto Bonilla? I love it. I could say that all day. And some days I do say it all day.
I imagine you just sitting at work and periodically going, Luis Alberto Bonilla.
Luis Alberto Bonilla. Oh, I love it. Here's my opinion on the rotation for the Reds in 2018. It is 98% dependent. The success or failure of this rotation is, maybe not 98%, but it's largely dependent on what we get out of Anthony DeSclafani. I think if he comes back as the Anthony DeSclafani that we saw in 2016, where he had a 3.28 ERA, 3 wins above replacement in just 20 starts, you know, 130 ERA plus, as a 26-year-old, if he comes back as that guy, all of a sudden this rotation starts looking amazing because you got Castillo and DeSclafani at the top. If he doesn't come back as if he's sort of a shell of his former self, then I think you got to sort of scrape and figure out a rotation. Does that make sense to you?
It does, though I think I kind of disagree, actually.
Wonderful. Let's hear it.
I agree, obviously, that he is absolutely the second best starter, no question, if he's healthy. Like, I don't think there's a question. But I think, and I will continue to say this until I'm proven wrong, I think what is really going to be a difference maker for the Reds is when Tyler Mahle inevitably solidifies his place in the rotation. I think he, in the long run, is going to end up better. I think, with the exception probably of Castillo, I think he's basically the cream of the crop. And he's just has been so good at every level in the minors. And it's like, one of the things I've kind of taken to paying attention to is how much younger than the league average a given player is. And so, like, Tyler Mahle, for most of his minor league career, has been like 2.5 to 4 years younger than the average player in the league. And he's destroyed every league he's been in against more experienced competition. So I think that he'll adjust, and I think that he's going to be a better pitcher. He still is somebody that I feel like people don't talk about enough. And I think he's going to be better than a lot of people are thinking he is.
They don't talk about him because he wasn't a number one draft pick.
Yeah.
You know, he's been under the radar his whole career, but like you say, man, this guy has performed at every level. So...
And often, you know, often those are the guys who kind of come around and just sort of end up being, you know, like really good, often quite great. You know, the example that I always bring up, because I just can't help it, is Joey Votto versus Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce, heck of a major league career, real solid player, like, you know, had some good years. he was the number one draft pick. Joey Votto was not, you know, was not a top draft pick. I don't think Joey Votto was ever considered like the best prospect in the system. And yet he's the player out of all of those guys who might end up going to the Hall of Fame.
Right. You never know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll wait till we get a little closer to the season to start making predictions about what the Reds are going to do. But it's going to be interesting to see if they do anything else. I think they're still looking to see what's available out there. But I don't know. At this point, the Reds have signed one player, Jared Hughes, a 32-year-old reliever, who has been released by two different teams in the National League Central already. So they're standing pat largely, but I don't know. Some days I look at it and I think, all right, you know, this team could be okay. Some days I'm like, oh, just sign Clayton Kershaw for crying out loud.
If the Reds could somehow possibly acquire Clayton Kershaw, I would be all for that.
Yeah, definitely. If they could just get Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout, it's all of a sudden look like a pretty good team.
It really would, right? They should, they should trade that Jared Hughes guy and like Scooter Gennett and Adam Duvall and then get Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw. That seems good, right?
It seems reasonable to me. Why don't they do it?
Yeah. All right. Call the Dodgers and the Angels. Let's make it happen.
Come on, Dick Williams. Get on the ball. We've just improved your team in 10 seconds.
So easy, that job there.
So easy. All right, Jason, any other thoughts?
Just that I'm tired, Chad.
Yeah, me too. I'm tired of waiting for the Reds to win. But I'm going to get back to being optimistic. Hey, can I tell you something I'm pretty happy about today?
Sure.
We've talked a little bit. I don't know if you and I have talked about it much here on the podcast, but I got a book coming out this spring, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, and it went to the printer today. We approved the cover art and all that stuff, and so it's exciting. Going to be out early April in time for opening day, hopefully. Should be in bookstores by that time, so we'll talk about that more on the podcast. Yeah. But it's my first book, and so I'm excited about it.
Yes, I approve.
I'm not a seasoned author like you, Jason Linden.
Oh, please don't call me seasoned.
You are seasoned, although I'm more well-seasoned. All right, anyway, appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. Happy to be back for the 2018 season. This was a fun one, and we've got plenty more coming every single week from here on out. Jason Linden, you can find him on Twitter, at Jason Linden. I'm at Dotson C on Twitter. If your name is Hunter Green, don't bother. I'm not going to talk about you anymore. Don't even follow my Twitter feed. You can follow us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter, and then at redlegnation.com every single day, where we're talking about the Reds and have been every single day for this coming month here. It'll be 13 straight years that we've been talking about the Cincinnati Reds and writing about them every day and just really obsessing over all the minutia of our favorite baseball team. Please subscribe to the podcast, Red Leg Nation Radio. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find your podcasts. We're there in all of them. And if they have an option where you can leave us a rating or review, especially on iTunes, if you go and leave us a rating and a good review, it helps us. It helps people find the podcast, and it moves us up in the search rankings. And you can always say something really nice about Jason on the reviews. We'll look at those. And if you say something really nice about Jason, we'll mention it on a future podcast. Jason, always great talking to you, buddy.
Always good to talk to you, Chad.
Yes, I know it is. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.